On WIPR, you're listening to The Checkup, a weekly series about how healthcare is changing in Maryland. I'm Sheila Cast. Today, we're going to focus on a particular group affected by the Affordable Care Act, refugees. Each year, more than 50,000 refugees enter the U.S., and hundreds of them resettle in the Baltimore area. Unlike other immigrants who do not receive medical assistance from the government and are not eligible to purchase insurance on the health exchange, the law looks at refugees and asylees as qualified non-citizens. Even before the Affordable Care Act took effect, they were eligible for federal programs like Refugee Medical Assistance, RMA, and some were eligible for Medicaid, the government health insurance program for the poor. In Maryland, if they're not eligible for Medicaid, they could get PAC, primary adult care insurance, from the state. As of January 1st, all refugees are eligible for Medicaid, and many here have purchased insurance on the state's health exchange, the Maryland Health Connection. We want to know more about how the ACA has affected refugees' access to health care. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Chuck Milligan, Deputy Secretary for Healthcare Financing and Medicaid Director. We'll also hear from Lauren Goodsmith, Project Coordinator for the Intercultural Counseling Connection, and from Robert Selke, Special Needs Care Coordinator for the International Rescue Committee in Baltimore. But we start by hearing from two refugees who are taking advantage of the expansion of Medicaid. Producer Jamila Kay went to the IRC in Baltimore, where she talked to two refugees about their health challenges and the care they received before January 1st. They are Alnur Adam, who's in his 40s, and 30-year-old Elhadi Adam. They're not related. While we hear their stories, we'll also hear the voice of IRC caseworker Sausan Al-Sayab, who served as their interpreter, and Robert Selke, whom Alnur calls Robbie. First, Alnur Adam, who's been in Baltimore since 2011. Alnur left Darfur, Sudan, when the war began in 2003. He fled to Tunisia and said at that time he weighed 52 kilos, 114 pounds.
They took me in the hospital. They said me I have diabetic and I have
hypertension.
Hypertension. When I came to the United States, I feel better. But I have a big problem in my half left side, all my body. Yeah, I have stroke in my left side. My right toe, it was hurt also. Robbie took me to the hospital, Vivio, to do a surgery.
He had bone problems in both his left and his right feet. And during his 8 months of refugee medical assistance, he was able to get his one foot operated on and get the follow-up to that. But the 8 months, he didn't want to operate on both feet at the same time to incapacitate Alnur. So we couldn't get the second foot operated on within that 8 month window. Now he has insurance again as of January 1st, and we're going to get the left foot operated on, which is his bad side to begin with due to the results of his stroke.
Alnur Adam, speaking to producer Jamila Kay at the International Rescue Committee in Baltimore. She also spoke to Elhadi Adam, also from Darfur, Sudan, who arrived in the U.S. last April. He received some medical attention while he was in Jordan, but still has many health problems.
First of all, I have some kind of issues with my his spine. Yeah, I have with my spine. And at the same time in Jordan, they told me I have tuberculosis. So I was in the hospital and I got medication for 9 months. I was then I got my travel here to the U.S. and I'm still having issues. I've been seeing doctors and I'm still having issues with my spine. I have with liver problems also. Sometimes I have also some palpitations, heart palpitations. My insurance is being renewed. I'm going to get a new insurance, so I'm still have to go several issues. First of all is my spine. I have to have a surgery. My worst issue now is my stomach, because I have stomach pain that makes me I can't sleep at night. And sometimes when I wake up, I just lose memory for a few seconds, and I don't know where I am. And then after that, I gain my memory back. So it's really hurting me. I have to work because I am obliged to, you know, I have so many bills to pay. I have to pay my rent. I got assistance from IRC for 8 months. After 8 months, there is no more assistance. Even though I'm in pain, I have to work because I have to be self-sufficient and I have to pay my bills and be able to, you know, support myself.
So Alhadi has two children, but they live in Sudan still, but they're not dependents of his here in the United States. So after his 8 months, he similarly, as a single adult with no dependents in the United States, he qualified for PAC insurance, so we could at least get him medications. And that was for a two-month period. And then when January 1st came, as a PAC recipient, he was able to automatically enroll into full medical assistance again. So we have him scheduled soon to get another endoscopy and to go back to pain management at Hopkins and the Spine Center to see what his options are for a spinal surgery.
Alnoor Adam and Alhadi Adam speaking through an interpreter with Maryland Morning producer Jamila Kay. This is the Checkup on 88.1. Now, to understand what has changed for refugees and asylees because of the Affordable Care Act, we turn to Deputy State Health Secretary Chuck Milligan. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us what the most significant changes are for refugees and asylees under the Affordable Care Act.
Sure. Let me first define what a refugee is for purposes of this. A refugee is somebody who's persecuted in their home country. They need protection. They're being persecuted on the basis of their race or religion or nationality. They seek refugee status while they're in their home country and are granted refugee status so that when they arrive in the U.S., they have special status that exempts them from a lot of the delays that other people have getting coverage. And what that means is that on their arrival, they're treated like U.S. citizens. They can qualify for Medicaid, for full benefits in Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act expansion without any delay, without any waiting period, and they can get coverage right from the very first day that they arrive and apply.
So when they apply for Medicaid, they have to meet the same kind of income restrictions that anybody else would need to meet for Medicaid, correct? Correct.
And in fact, and if they qualify for the tax credits under the qualified health plans in the exchange, they would qualify for those advanceable premium tax credits from the IRS as well. In other words, they're treated just like U.S. citizens.
Am I correct that before January 1st, refugees could apply for Medicaid, but unless they had dependents in this country, they were not likely to get Medicaid benefits?
They were not likely be simply because we didn't cover most adults in Medicaid before the Affordable Care Act. And so adults who are refugees face some of the same barriers to getting Medicaid coverage that low-income citizen adults experienced before the Affordable Care Act.
And there's something called refugee medical assistance, which, as I understand it, lasts for 8 months. How does that factor in?
That is, it's a federal program. You can think of it almost like a block grant. And what has happened is that it covered a lot of these refugees for 8 months. It drew down this block grant. And so as these individuals now qualify for full Medicaid benefits or full benefits through qualified health plans, it relieves some of the burden on those block grants. And so not only does moving into full Medicaid benefits eliminate that 8-month time period and time limit that refugees were subject to before, but it also frees up some of that funding to help serve other people.
Any idea how many refugees in Maryland are being affected by the Affordable Care Act?
The data I have is that between 2009 and 2013, in Maryland, we served, including asylees, that is, these are individuals who are in the country, not entering as refugees, but are granted asylum while they're in the country because of the risk of sending them home to face persecution and death and violence. We have served in the state about 10,000 people between 2009 and 2013 in refugee and asylee status. And in that same period of time, between 2009 and 2013, Maryland resettled almost 6,000 refugees, and we resettled almost 4,000 asylees.
I've been asking you about refugees, but who else gets this same kind of treatment as if they were citizens?
Individuals also treated with the same status as refugees, and that means eligible for Medicaid immediately, include certain individuals who are leaving Cuba and Haiti under persecution, victims of human trafficking, certain individuals who are leaving Iraq, Afghanistan, and other war zones.
Congress just passed a budget that, as I understand it, includes $1.4 billion nationally for refugee resettlement. Any idea how much of that will come to Maryland and what kind of impact it would have?
I don't happen to know the answer to that question.
I raised it because there are some advocates at the national level who basically say the United States needs to be spending more money. So I'm curious as to your impression of, as to whether the money that goes into resettling refugees is keeping up with the demand as refugees come to Maryland.
Well, so let me distinguish Medicaid from some of the other programs that help refugees. On the Medicaid side, the federal budget appropriation you mentioned is less relevant because as an entitlement program, Medicaid will cover everybody who qualifies. And so we won't turn anybody away who meets refugee or asylee status. But there are other social service programs and other resettlement efforts that are not through the Medicaid program where there is limited funding through the federal government and more funding could help serve more people with plugging them into other social service programs, helping them with housing, employment, and other social service needs they would have as they resettle in the U.S.
I really appreciate your explaining it to us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chuck Milligan is Maryland's Deputy Secretary for Healthcare Financing and Director of Medicaid. This is The Checkup on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Joining me in the studio to talk about ways to connect refugees and asylees to primary care and mental health care are two people who work at doing just that. Robert Selke, whose voice we heard earlier, is the Special Needs Care Coordinator for the International Rescue Committee in Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Lauren Goodsmith, Project Coordinator for the Intercultural Counseling Connection. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sheila.
Now, Robert, you connected us with Alnoor Adam and Alhadi Adam, whom we heard from earlier. I was struck with how many health issues they're each dealing with. Is that typical of refugees?
Yeah, so we're dealing with a population that, you know, in most cases had very limited access to health care throughout their lives. I've got some clients that really had never been to the doctor before they started to get evaluated for immigration purposes through the refugee process. So, you know, men in their 60s that had never been to the doctor before. I would say of the 600 to 800 refugee clients that we settle in Baltimore, roughly 10% of them is deemed to have a special medical condition, which then they get forwarded to me for care coordination. And these health issues span the gamut from, you know, mental health issues, cancer, HIV, diabetes, physical disability. So roughly 65 to 70 referrals for special medical conditions of the 600 to 800 arriving a year.
And mental health is exactly what I wanted to ask you about, Lauren. What about the mental health situation of refugees?
All of them, no matter where they come from, have experienced extreme loss, displacement because of conflict, different types of trauma, physical, emotional, psychological. And those kinds of experiences on top of the acculturation, trying to adjust to their new environment, new language, different way of life, which adds additional stress and challenges.
And tell us what the Intercultural Counseling Connection does.
This initiative, the Intercultural Counseling Connection, is designed to help address these mental health needs of refugees in the greater Baltimore area by reaching out to mental health providers across different agencies and areas of expertise and helping to provide them with free training on issues specific to refugee mental health, free training that will then complement their existing skills and then invite them to take part in a network of care under which they will provide either pro bono, outright free counseling services or Medicaid reimbursed services for those who are already empaneled for Medicaid to up to two refugee clients or families per year.
I'm trying to get a picture of this. How do you interact with these providers? How many providers do you work with and what is your interaction with them?
Through the course of the workshops, which we've offered since June, there have been 7 workshops overall on different topics related to refugee mental health. We now have a core group of just about 20 mental health providers from different agencies who are ready to help provide this pro bono or Medicaid reimbursed care.
Rob, most refugees I assume, entering Baltimore, Central Maryland, are going to come in contact with the IRC for some type of support. Do your clients have someone assigned to them who kind of walks them through dealing with the health system, making doctor appointments, getting medications, et cetera?
All clients, refugees, are met at the airport by a case manager who is an employee of the IRC. And then they work with them for a period of about 8 months, sometimes longer. We have extended services for people with severe problems such as domestic violence or eviction. So they really do extensive case management services starting from the moment the family gets off the plane, and really pre-arrival planning as well, particularly for individuals with severe medical conditions.
And Lauren, are providers, mental health care providers, obligated to provide translation services for clients?
There are certain facilities such as Johns Hopkins and Baltimore Medical Systems Behavioral Health, which have on-staff interpreters. However, there are extremely limited interpretation services provided by any other mental health entities. A lot of groups are unaware of the fact that there is an obligation, if they receive any federal funding at all, to provide interpretation under the Civil Rights Act. It's a question of access.
What about the cultural or religious considerations of some clients? Is that a factor in the kind of services that they are comfortable with and seek?
Absolutely. There's a lot of clients that are uncomfortable seeing care providers of the opposite gender. But it's, you know, it comes down to an individual basis for a lot of people, but it's certainly something that needs to be taken into account. Additionally, for some of our clients, the whole idea of making and keeping appointments and not being able to schedule something the same day is really a challenge. So it's education on both sides. It's education for the provider, and it's education and for the refugee patient as well.
Lauren, what aspects of cultural traditions do you find most challenging?
The causality of different mental health issues differs very greatly in different cultures. It's very important for the providers who work with refugee clients to be attuned to this and to, in a spirit of humility and openness, be ready to learn about how would something like this be addressed in the refugee client's home community, what spiritual leaders, what community leaders would they normally seek out in dealing with an issue. Another very, very important aspect is that the vast majority of refugees come from cultures that are collective in nature, very, very different from our Western individual-oriented culture, but the idea of the identified patient. So a lot of the approaches will necessarily involve the whole family.
So in that situation, is the client likely to want to have several members of her family in the session, in the counseling session?
That has happened. That is something that several of our facilitators and several therapists have described happening. Mm-hmm. And it can be, if you're not prepared for that, it can be sensitive to deal with when you're accustomed to working one-on-one. But that's one of the reasons that we have been reaching out, especially to people who are receptive, clinicians who are receptive to working with families.
If I could add on to that, actually, it, engaging the entire family is certainly beneficial with a lot of clients. But in some cases, it also works in reverse. A lot of stigma is around mental health issues in particular, in areas where a lot of our clients are coming from. So I sometimes find that the refugees I work with don't want their family to know that they're seeking a specific kind of care, even for issues apart from mental health. So it's a tricky issue. Another big challenge is the whole idea of preventive medicine. Not only going to the doctor when you feel sick, or not only taking your medication when you feel sick, but introducing the idea of, you know, chronic illness and preventive medicine, and helping to engage them on a daily basis with, you know, healthy practices.
Big challenge.
Sometimes, yeah. But we've got some great success stories.
Well, I appreciate you both talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Selke is the Special Needs Care Coordinator for the International Rescue Committee in Baltimore. Lauren Goodsmith is Project Coordinator for the Intercultural Counseling Connection. We have more information about the Affordable Care Act's impact on refugees and asylees on our website, wypr.org/thecheckup. That's also where you can see photos of Al-Noor Adam, Al-Hadi Adam, and Sausan Al-Sayab, and listen to extended interviews with them, including a conversation with Sausan for International Women's Day last March. Again, wypr.org/thecheckup. I'm Sheila Cast. DJ Spooky talks to Tom Hall when Maryland Morning resumes. Stay with us on 88.1.